This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is 1994, like in a perfect time capsule.
He's operating at the peak of his powers.
Jim Carrey is an outstanding performer, and this is probably his pinnacle performance.
If I'm eating a spicy food, I will shout out, "This one's spicy meatball." There's no meatball involved. Missus is Italian. She gets offended by me trying to do the really bad accent, but I can't help it. It's just part of me now. So
when Cameron Diaz walks through that door, that is just like an astonishing entrance to any kind of film. And I don't think anyone knew of her beforehand.
She makes the mask as well as Jim Carrey.
Absolutely. Hey everybody, welcome to Flixwatcher Podcast. I'm Kobe, and today I'm joined by Stephen.
Hey.
Kelechi.
Hey.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about the Jim Carrey classic. Well, we'll decide. The Mask.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flixwatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Stephen and Kelechi. If you could please say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kelechi, and I am a production manager at Renaissance Studios. That's my day job. And by night, I freelance as a freelance film critic, writing for outlets for film stories, Jump Cut Online, Set the Tape, and even my own blog, which is Confessions from a Geek Mind.
Yes, and you've been on here before. One episode of yours has come out, Power of the Dog. Since then, it's been nominated for all the Oscars. Are you proud of that?
I like to think I had a little bit of helping hand to get over that line.
It was the Flixwatcher score, wasn't it?
It was me championing Jane Campion.
And who are you there on the other side?
Hi there, Stephen. Most people know me as Stephen Geekface. I don't like to use the word film critic because, I don't know, it makes it a bit all weird when it starts saying film critic, but I prefer myself as a film buff. I run myself on social media with the hashtag So Geeked About Movies, where I talk about movies online and on social media. So that's basically what I do.
And how did you come about the moniker Stephen Geekface?
It kind of just happened, you know. I wear glasses, geeky. I'm Stephen, and it just kind of molded together. There you go.
Well, I mean, it's the time of the geek, isn't it? Really, for the past 15 years, in the 80s, being called a geek or a nerd would have been one of the worst. But yes. Now it's like, hey,
your time has come.
We wear it proudly. Love being a geek.
Oh yeah, of course. Confessions of a Geek Mind. You're bringing geek to the forefront of everything. Now we are talking today about The Mask, which is your choice, Stephen.
Yes.
Can you tell us first of all why you chose it, and then I'm going to get my timer up, and you'll have 60 seconds or less to tell us the synopsis.
Right. Okay. Well, I chose this film not only it being a classic, and probably having one of the greatest debuts from two particular actors and actresses. It's a film that I grew up in. I remember it being the second film I saw in the cinema. I won't say my age, but it left a really big impression on me, and it's a film I go to when I'm feeling down, I'm sick. I just put it on and just constantly watch it, say the words, sing the songs, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of the film.
Okay. Hopefully our scores will represent your enthusiasm. So we're going to be... And 60 seconds for the synopsis starts now.
Right. So Jim Carrey plays a guy called Stanley Ipkiss, who is a lone guy who doesn't get all the girls. He finds a magical mask that grants him all his wishes and makes him this crazy animal lover, and finds a super hot girl played by Cameron Diaz, and he saves the city from a really bad mobster.
Love it. Kelechi, The Mask. Where do you sit with The Mask? Was it your first film, second film in the cinema?
I'm showing my age. Do you know what? I did not see The Mask in the cinemas. I saw it on VHS tape, if mm-hmm. everyone remembers those days. Rented out of Blockbuster. Blockbuster videos. So that was my early childhood watching the film. And I absolutely loved it. Like, it's a weird period. Maybe Stephen will agree with me, but Jim Carrey has probably the most quotable lines. Like, he's operating at the peak of his powers. And every line he does is just memorable. So when I watched The Mask for the first time back in the day when it was released, I would remember his lines. Like, I would recite them, like smoking, all of that stuff. I would actually carry that into my own conversations. Like, I would drop it into conversations.
I used to use that in conversations. Now, if I'm eating a spicy food, I will shout out, "This one's spicy meatball." There's no meatball involved. My missus is Italian. She gets offended by me trying to do the really bad accent, but I can't help it. It's just part of me now. So I completely understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. It's so relatable and so childlike. And then you just love the energy that Jim Carrey brings to it. So I think when I was a kid, I just was gravitated towards that kind of performance and that kind of being larger than life. And it's that mix of cartoon energy. Yeah, it's basically you're watching a live action cartoon. So it's no different from watching it from, like, you know, mixing it up with your Saturday morning cartoons, where it was like Batman or Spider-Man or X-Men and stuff like that. You just throw on the mask, which eventually actually did become a cartoon series after the film's release.
Well, this is more like the kind of Looney Tunes type cartoons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Than the comic book X-Men type thing.
Yeah.
On this rewatch, I was thinking, if it was to be redone now, would you actually want to change the CGI? And I don't think you'd maybe tweak it a bit, but I wouldn't want to make it like super modern. I think
the CGI is perfection. I mean, it changed the game. Before then, from what I remembered, CGI was only used for dinosaurs and creature monsters. And then The Mask came. I mean, Jim Carrey himself is a living CGI anyway, so it didn't have to do too much with the character. But when they did it, they just brought it to life. And I think even now, I mean, I've got it on Blu-ray as well, and the effects still hold up for the most part. One scene doesn't, the bit where he like turns into a wolf, spoiler, that kind of doesn't hold up a bit, but everything else is top notch. So
when he turns into the Howling Wolf It's a bit shonky there.
That's your Tex Avery influence. But jumping off what Steve was saying, I think if you compare the CGI to its sequel, Son of the Mask, you realize how much the mask holds up in terms of its visual effects.
We do not speak of that. We do not speak of that film. That film does not exist.
It doesn't exist, but just for comparison's sake, this nature of this podcast, it does exist. And it just goes to show that it was ahead of its time, like The Mask, not the Son of the Mask, but it was ahead of its time. And it really does live up to that kind of cartoon nature, like that what you're watching a live action cartoon. I mean, this might be a little bit outlandish of a statement, but it has that kind of same kinetic energy as Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Definitely.
So like that idea of like you're just mixing in, it just accepts those both worlds, like you're mixing live action and animation. And I think that was, I felt like The Mask was always that kind of spiritual successor to it in terms of that
that's a big claim, but
I like the synergy out of it, because you watch it for the performances. Like, and how they engage with it. And if they engage with it and believe in it, then you believe in it. And that's the same kind of feeling I get when I watch like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and then you watch The Mask and you kind of get that same energy as well.
Helen, what are you thinking about The Mask?
So I don't think this wasn't like my first cinema visit, but it was maybe the first on my own without parents.
Oh, really?
So I remember going to see it at the cinema.
So when you say on your own without parents, did you go with friends or was it just on your own?
Yeah. And that's the only time I've seen it. And the thing that I remember the most about it is Cameron Diaz's entrance, where she comes into the bank looking all sexy in her red dress. And that was kind of the main thing. And I just remember it just being...
Stephen's just fainted.
What just a debut as well.
That is the greatest debut
isn't it? Any
actress I've ever seen.
She is... apparently she auditioned for this role 12 times. Like, that's a lot of auditioning, but I'm glad she got it because she is great in this. And I just remember, like, the catchphrases were just everywhere and Jim Carrey was everywhere. His green face and the teeth, the comic teeth, absolutely everywhere. Rewatching it, Netflix gave me a 55%, you know, when it predicts whether you're going to like it.
Yeah, 55% match.
Yeah, match. I don't think I'm going to as love it as much as Steven, just to say. But then my Jim Carrey thing is I'm very, very much more into Jim Carrey when he's sad and miserable or in The Truman Show. And that's kind of where I lie on Jim Carrey. So,
yeah, we've had a few Jim Carreys. We've had Truman Show. We've had Jim and Andy. And as we record, Spotless Mind is back on Netflix. So if anyone's listening and they want to join us, you'll make Helen very, very happy if you choose
Sad Eternal Jim Sunshine. Carrey. Sad or playing the man on the moon. It was interesting going back to it.
When you say going back to it, when was the last time you watched it?
This back in 1994 in the cinema that doesn't exist anymore. The director of this also directed Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, which is an excellent entry into
good choice.
That. And this is probably going to lead into the engagement score, but I was doing a bit of reading and apparently the comics and the film itself was meant to be a lot more violent than it actually was. And you could kind of like feel the undertones of violence. And when I was watching it this time, I was like, this really isn't a kid's film. And yet we all went as kids and probably like, you know, it was like, oh, The Mask, like, we've got it on VHS. Let's sit down and watch it with your three-year-old brother and things like that. And family time film, it's not.
Yeah. As a child, I didn't realise that Jim Carrey was carrying a condom.
Yeah.
Follows a balloon. Didn't get the joke until I got older. And I was like, whoa.
You thought it was hilarious, though, at the time, though, didn't you? These things, you're like... It's hilarious.
It was based on ignorance because you just didn't know and you just accepted the performance from Jim Carrey. So yeah, when you get older and you realize, holy crap, that was a condom. If that was released today, there was no way that bit's in it.
Yeah.
There's no way that's in it.
I just want to recall on this because this came in 1994. This is an insane start for your cinematic career. 1994 was Ace Ventura, The Mask and Dumb and Dumber all in the same year. That's ridiculous. You can't do that anymore. That's not a way to start out your career. And then it was like Batman Forever. I enjoy his performances a bit there, but you know, that's
different vibe, but still entertaining.
Yeah. There's no one, I can't think of anyone now who could do this. There's no one who could be The Mask and do it in the same way and carry that kind of panache. I'd like to see who is kind of listed. Well, I'd like to see if this,
I'll let you a little fun fact for you guys. Before Jim Carrey, it was supposed to be Nicolas Cage playing Mask. Now Nicolas Cage can be eccentric as well and crazy in films like Face Off, and
it'd be a different film.
it'll be a different tone.
Yeah,
because if you think of Jim Carrey as like the slapstick, you know, if we're talking about the tones of what this film was like, his character loves cartoons. He embodies cartoons, and therefore he's a living cartoon. You know, Nick Cage will bring a whole different vibe, probably a much more chaotic vibe, probably much more like, you know, that high energy he does. But it's a vibe. You would expect something else, and it'll probably be truer to the comics, and be a little bit darker and a little bit more authentic in that respect.
It probably would be. It's, that kind of sounds similar to me as to when Eddie Murphy took over what's supposed to be Sly Stallone in Beverly Hills Cop, for example. that's two completely different films. And I'm happy that this is the version of The Mask we get. I'm super happy that that's the version of Beverly Hills Cop we get. But yeah, I'm with Helen. I think I might have seen this the second time outside of the cinema, but I did see this at cinema and I remember being utterly enthralled by it. On rewatch, not so much, but I think it's still, it's like a proper time capsule film. This is 1994, like in a perfect time capsule. And I think it sits there amazingly. Jim Carrey is an outstanding performer and this is probably his pinnacle performance. And I think it's amazing. But then, yeah, I think also when Cameron Diaz walks through that door for the first time, I thought, unimaginably, I thought it was like halfway through the film she walks in, but it's like literally in the first 5 minutes. So it's all going, like everything's clicking right from the start of the film. And she's an amazing screen presence, not just through the entrance, but she's great in this and her career's gone on off a pace as well. But that is just like an astonishing entrance to any kind of film. And I don't think anyone knew of her beforehand.
No.
I think she was a model beforehand, and that's how she got casted into the film. So this was definitely her debut performance, and what a performance. Yes, it is a little bit sexualized. Yes, it's a little bit dated and so forth. But in some respects, she does hold her own, and that is the start of her career that she has. You know, if you think about the films that she's done, you know, The Holiday, Charlie's Angels, what's the other ones?
Adaptation.
Shrek. Yeah, Shrek.
Something About Mary was her big one.
Yeah, Something About Mary, yeah.
Yeah, there's Something About Mary. That these are not flukes. Do you know what I mean? These are things that she has worked hard to personalize. She has a good taste for comedy. Like, she can deliver a good beat. So the fact that, you know, her performance, I wouldn't discount it against Jim Carrey. Like, she makes The Mask as well as Jim Carrey.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think one of the things I said in the notes was, who's had the better career, quote unquote, as a result of this? And I think it's almost a coin toss for me, to be honest with you. Jim Carrey then goes on to like Truman Show a bit later on and like, say, Eternal Sunshine. But then it's almost to say, do you want to watch a Jim Carrey film now or a Cameron Diaz film? I'd be like, oh, I don't know, actually.
I think...
Depends which one.
Yeah, depends
which one. But I think also, I wouldn't say tragedy, but it's almost a shame that Diaz is not acting anymore. Like, I think she's kind of...
Neither is Carrey, really, is he?
Carrey, but he's still got Sonic. like, do you know what I mean? They keep pulling him out. Oh, he's like, he comes back onto SNL or something like that. But, you know, I would love to see more what Diaz does in this kind of new, more centric awareness of what we are in this world today.
Yeah.
Because obviously Carrey will always be Carrey. Like, he will find his niche. He will find his comedic timing. If he needs to be the slapstick character, he can do that. If he needs to be the dramatic actor, he can do that. Diaz, I just feel like we're missing that voice. Like, we miss it, whether it is a comedy, whether it is something serious. I mean, I think the last kind of, well, maybe not the greatest film, but the like kind of last serious film that she did was like The Counselor with, you know, Ridley Scott's film. Not the greatest of watches, but she commits to the role and you feel like you miss that her talent. You miss her voice. So yeah, if Diaz is listening to this podcast, please come back. You know, come back. We want to hear you again.
Yeah, I would love to see it in a Marvel movie or just show her face, especially for the new generation to know that she left a big impact for us anyway. Well, I know she did for me anyway. So it would be good to see.
Yeah, totally. I think she's a voice that's missed, and I think she does have a lot to say on kind of a few different political points that would be great to hear from nowadays. Was it Sex Tape, the last film that she did, maybe?
According to Wikipedia, I've not seen that. I don't know what that was.
I didn't see it.
I didn't see it.
That's why we didn't see her last film.
I think the last thing she was involved in was that stunt woman challenge that was done in lockdown, where like every woman like punches the screen and then you see her briefly. And that's like, oh my god, yeah, that was great. Like, you see Cameron Diaz, like, oh my god, that's her.
And the Shreks had diminishing returns. So we've had Cameron Diaz on here. We think we did Shrek 2. All right. Is there anything else, guys, we want to say about The Mask before we get to the scorings?
I would like to say, I don't know if anyone noticed in the movie, you got the two cops, Doyle and I believe the other guy is Calloway. And halfway through the movie, they play proper straight cops, like normal cops. You know, there's a scene. Mm. And then just halfway through the movie, they just become these bumbling Ren and Stimpy characters all of a sudden. And every couple of seconds, you hear someone go, Doyle! And throughout the whole movie. And no one explains why, what happened. The director say, you know what, it's not working, guys. Let's flip the script. We don't know. We don't know.
That's true. Actually, I just thought they were inept cops.
Keystone cops for the new generation.
That's next time I watch it, which might be in another 20 years, I'll hopefully remember that, Stephen, and try and pinpoint the point at which they go goofy.
I think it's at the point where the music comes in, when Damas is doing these Cuban Pete songs. Yeah, after that, Doyle's not the same anymore. He's just a bumbling fool.
The power of the mask.
Maybe the power of the mask, but it's never shown in film. Maybe it was supposed to be a director's cut, the extended version of the mask, and we never saw it.
deleted scene.
Oh, no. The 3-hour movie of the mask. I don't know.
I mean, my two cents would be that just how great the dart scene and the Coco Bongo Club between Carrie and Diaz. Like, they're just the chemistry on point, the energy. Like, when I saw that, I was like, yes, I love this. I want to recreate that one way or another.
That whole scene in the Coco Bongo Club was great because he dances with her, and then the bad guys attack him, and he does the kind of bouncing around like a proper Looney Tunes character, dodging the bullets, and then gets hit, and he does that fake kind of dying, and then accepts the award.
Oscar bit is amazing.
Yeah,
I love the scene where when he pretend he wins the award and he goes the wrong way, and you see it every time in a war show. Like, oh, that way. Let me just that way. That's just right. And Peter Green, who plays Dorian, he's like, oh, I'm aware. I'm on camera now. Let me do my hair and look composed. Those moments there that just make the film very special for me.
Yeah.
Well, let's head to the scores, guys.
Hello, I'm Kate Lever, host of Who's a Good Dog? The podcast for anyone who's ever loved a dog. We're one of the other podcasts in the Stripped Media family. Each episode, I ask a brilliant person to introduce me to their dog and tell me how having a dog has changed their life. Listen to Who's a Good Dog wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places. And we will start with you, please, Stephen, with your recommendability.
I would recommend this film is a 4. If you've never seen it, highly recommend it to go and watch. It's one of Jim Carrey's best movies. Cameron Diaz's, you know, best direct debut of any actor or actress I've seen in a long time. Probably one of the best dog actors I've seen as well.
Milo's awesome.
Yeah, Milo, Max, wherever you are, if you're alive, kudos to you. If you're not, rest in peace, but absolutely great. I'm surprised he didn't get an Oscar or nominated. Should have got something for it. But yeah, it's just a fun film. I probably wouldn't recommend it to little kids to go and watch. Maybe a little bit older, but I think you can watch it a year again and again and again, and you can see the different jokes that you probably didn't get, like the condom joke and other stuff that happens, like the machine inside people's ass as well.
Yeah, that's dark.
Yeah. So 4, Kelechi.
I'm going to go with 4 as well. If you want to see Jim Carrey at the peak of his powers, as Kobe mentioned, you know, you think The Mask, Batman Forever, Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber, this was that start of that journey of his career. And it's one of those performances by Carrey where you can just watch and just study the comedic timing, you know, study the, you know, his mannerisms, his his thoughtfulness. Like there's an art form to what he does. And I think the more times you watch it, the more you kind of grow appreciative of his comedic genius in a sense, you know? So yeah, if you love comedy, I agree. You know, maybe not for the younger kids. I know it's a PG rating, but times have changed, kids. Is different. But
when you say study it, it's quite interesting because you can study it, but I still don't think you can. It'd be hard pushed to replicate it. And if someone did replicate it, it'd just be tossed off as just do the Jim Carrey there, aren't you?
I just don't think you can do it. You can't replicate. I think the only person who could replicate would be Jim Carrey. You know, and that is true to his talent and his how he just commits to the craft. Like, I mean, I don't know, again, another outlandish statement, but the way he plays Stanley Ipkiss and the Mask, it's like Clark Kent and Superman. You know, it's the kind of like that sort of, I can play the sore loser, down on my luck, don't have, you know, trying to get my way in this world, but don't have anything. And then he puts on the mask and he suddenly, I'm the king of the world. I can do whatever. That in itself is a beautiful transformation. So for four, that's what I'm going to give it.
That just reminded me of one of my favorite actual scenes I remembered from the first time watching it. Is a small one, but it's when he meets the mask expert played by the Bueller guy.
His name's Ben something now. So I've just
Well, I just want to say Bueller. and he's like, he puts on the mask. He's about to put on the mask, thinking he's going to turn into the mask, and he just doesn't. And he's doing that kind of like. Helen, recommendability.
Not as high as you guys. when you were talking just about the sad Jim Carrey, the sad Stanley, like that's my. I think you have to recommend. If I'm recommending this, I'm saying like you have to be into the Ace Ventura. The stand-up that Jim Carrey, which for me is like, I'm going to pass. And except everyone else is probably into that, but a bit of a pass. And I think it's kind of like quite a bit of a nostalgia thing. It's kind of weird that this hasn't had sort of a revival, whereas like obviously Dumb and Dumber kind of did with the new one. And then obviously like Ace Ventura is kind of like, we don't really talk about that anymore. But this one could have a bit of something, maybe. I don't know, maybe with it being on Netflix, it might find a new audience. I don't quite know the up-and-coming people, whether they're going to like latch onto it the way that everyone did back in the 90s. So with caveats, 3.5.
I'm going to jump in there with a 4. I think, yeah, watch it. You might not like it, but you might enjoy it. Who am I to say? I don't think it's aged as well as it could do. But I think it's a fun film. And if you haven't seen it, I think, yeah, definitely have a watch. Repeat viewing score. This is where I might go down a fair bit. But Steve might go up. Repeat viewing score, Steve.
I am going to also go over 4 with this one. Just on the simple fact of, I think once you get hooked, and maybe it's nostalgic in me, you always, there'll be something new every time that you didn't notice before. Like I said, there's some loads of crude jokes that just fly by when I was a child to now. And yeah, just on that point, there's loads of stuff you can get from the film. The music will keep you coming back anyway, because I've got Cuban Pete in my head right now, just playing like in my head after just even just talking about it. So that's going to definitely bring you back to the film. So I'm going to give it 4.
Actually,
I'm going to go with 3.8, just because I haven't watched The Mask in ages until obviously for this podcast, so I watched it last night. but it wasn't necessary in my consciousness for ages, for decades. But that's not to say that it wasn't like you sometimes you catch an odd repeat on TV or something like that, you know, on Channel 5 or something like that, and then you're instantly brought back into it. But it's not sort of like a film that you probably seek out on a regular basis. Obviously, Stephen, you have the nostalgia, the connection, appreciate it. But it's, for me, it wasn't a film that I loved it, but it's not something I would like, oh yeah, you know what, I feel, you know, I'm going to pop it on and, you know, check it out. So 3.8. And yeah, you will enjoy it. And I feel like sometimes you will just, when you do have it, see it on, it's like a nice surprise, like a nice refresher to see again.
Helen.
I'm going to go a bit lower. the second time I've seen it. So I'm probably not going to revisit again. So a 2.
I'm going for 1.8 here. I will watch it. I will watch it at some point, but I can't see myself getting back to it more quickly. Small screen score, Stephen.
I think in terms of small screen, it probably works as a 3. You can see on the. I mean, it was cool on the big screen, but I've seen it more times on the small screen. And yeah, just with the TV and maybe not so much on a mobile phone. I don't know who watches movies that way, but if you do, you need help.
People do. People do. You want to
seriously need help.
Slap it out of the hands.
I don't know how you could do that. But yeah, on your TV screen, it's fine. You don't have to rush it. I mean, if they put it in cinema, I'll go and watch it. You know, anniversary stuff, just as me. But yeah, I think on the small screen, it's fine. It's just fine. Like all the effects still hold up as well. So nothing's going to be off-putting or weird or like, oh, I've just seen that render. That needs more rendering. but yeah, 3. I'm going over 3 with that one.
Clutchy.
Well, considering that I've always have seen The Mask on the small screen, so for me, it's like 3.2. Just because, yeah, I don't necessarily think it's the most cinematic film. At that time, when I watched it for the first time, it was classed as a family film, so we did watch it around our TV. So there is that visual, you know, so it felt like that was its true form. Mm. You know, not in the cinema. So, you know, if it did come back in the cinema, great. It's, you know, it's a great nostalgic bust, like a trip to nostalgia. But for me, small screen has probably always been its home.
Helen?
So I think it's going to be very difficult for any cinema to recreate the thrill of 1994 cinema in Burton-on-Trent. So the small screen is, I think, fine for this. I guess it's on Netflix, so you can watch it now. You don't need to wait for it to be reissued or anything. So a 5 for a small screen.
No, I really enjoyed it in cinema. And one of the most enduring memories was people booing when the dog had the mask taken off him. Milo got the mask taken off him. I was like, boo. so I do enjoy those kind of moments. But yeah, I don't think you need to see it in the cinema again. 4.5 engagement score, Stephen.
Engagement. Well, I would have given it probably a 2 as the film starts. Not through much. I think a guy dies, you know, the film gets hit by this weird pipe and as the mask shows and the music. But by the time Cameron Diaz comes in, it goes straight to a 4. You got me hooked. And just seeing Stanley Ipkiss play, because you know, everybody compares the movies to like the Ace Venturas and Dumb and Dumb, but I think it's dumbed down compared to those films. You know, those films were more for adults, and you know, Jim Carrey goes fully loose, and this one's a bit dumbed down. And you kind of want to see where Stanley Ipkiss goes, you know, in this movie, because there's so many things bad happening to him. He's getting chiefed out by girls. He's getting his car's broken. He has to take out the loaner and all sorts. You just want to see where this goes. He has all these dreams. Milo is adorable. So I'm gonna give it a 4.
Clutchy.
I'm gonna go with a 4 as well. I think you're always attracted by the story about Stanley Ipkiss. Like it just does pull you in. And the fact is that it's also one of the benefits of it is that it's also a short film. So if you have, you know, if you're kind of don't want to do the kind of 3-hour epics and so forth, you can watch this film in an hour and a half and you're in and out, and you have a kind of short, simple story to just lose yourself into. So yeah, 4.
Helen?
Kind of could remember enough of what the plot was and the kind of like the main bits with the dancing. And I did go down a bit of an IMDb wormhole on this one. So I wasn't massively engaged, 2.5, just because I was reading about the mask and how they made it and all kinds of things and like how long it took. It took like hours to put like the mask on.
Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Apparently the plan was that he wasn't meant to talk. They were going to like put the talking bits afterwards because he had those silly teeth. But when he ended up like doing it, he like sounded so crazy that they kept it in. It's loads of fun trivia all about it. I really enjoyed like going back and going like, oh, if they did it nowadays, they'd probably just like CGI his face and it'd be really weird and it'd just be like awful. So yeah.
3.1. I couldn't remember how it played out. I couldn't remember how the nuances kind of played out. So I was kind of like, oh, how did they? I don't remember him getting locked up and how to get out of, oh, okay. So I was kind of into it that way. But then there were kind of other parts where I wasn't kind of tuned in as much as I could be. So yeah, 3.1. That gives us an overall score of 3.52500.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah, well done to the mask.
Not bad, guys. Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad at all. Well, well chosen.
90s nostalgia.
Stephen and Kalechi, can you sign off by telling everyone who's listening where we can find you online, and we'll say goodbye to the listeners.
So you can find me on Twitter at K.E. Henulo and on Instagram at Special K Writes.
Nice.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter and name as Stephen Geekface, all one word, and on YouTube, So Geeked About Movies.
Nice. Well, thank you very much, guys, for bringing the mask to us, and we'll say goodbye to all listeners.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.